it!
Hey guys, welcome to a special bonus standalone episode. I guess all the episodes standalone. But you know, a one-off, a solo Stan episode of Game Time Bro, the show. We're very out of practice here. We haven't recorded in a while. I'm here today to talk about, I couldn't help myself, I couldn't resist. I want to talk about Final Fantasy Tactics. Final Fantasy Tactics came out in 1998, at least in America, during what was just an absolute golden era of Final Fantasy content. You had obviously Final Fantasy VII, maybe the biggest breakthrough JRPG of all time, coming out in 97, and then in rapid succession, Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy IX, X, and then the online-only 11 was in like 2001 or so. Final Fantasy Tactics was kind of an unexpected gem, frankly. It's not like the Final Fantasy games that had preceded it. Of course, today there are tons of Final Fantasy branded spinoffs. There are probably literally over 50 games that contain the name Final Fantasy in the title. And there are sequels to each individual game, or several individual games, whatever. My point is, it really came out of nowhere and was one of those word-of-mouth games in the very early internet era, where you just kind of, you know, the only reason I even played this game or knew about this game was because a friend of mine was given it for Easter or his birthday or something, like, because his own mom was at Toys R Us and said, oh, a Final Fantasy game. My kid likes those. And she bought him this obscure PlayStation disc called Final Fantasy Tactics. And he played it. He loved it. I went over to his house. I played it. I loved it. I became quickly obsessed with it. And within probably a few months, that probably felt like years at the time, I had my own copy. And I just played the ever-loving shit out of it, loved it. And, you know, the way only a simple child can. But I've just gone back and revisited this game. I must have played it and beaten it like 5 or 6 times before the year 2002 or so. Never touched it since then. Never played the War of the Lions update. Not even a remake, really, but just the core game with additional content and a better translation. Never played that. That came out in like 2007. I finally got around to playing it earlier this summer, really for the last month or so. Downloaded the whole thing on my little Android phone for like 10-12 bucks and just dumped another 40 hours into it, and really had a great time. I know Trev's playing it, I know Sween has started to play it, and I just couldn't wait to talk to them about it, because boy, I have so much to say about this game and why I love it so much. So the game itself is a turn-based strategy RPG that takes place on an isometric grid where you are moving your units one at a time and attacking with them. And each unit gets one move and one action per turn, and the turns are determined by a clock running underneath it all, just keeping track of charge times and speed counters and, you know, whose turn it is next and which moves are executing when. And it's just in my opinion, just a beautifully executed, just the gameplay itself, starting there, fundamentally, the machinery running this game. Every time I've played this game, I've learned something new about it. and that goes up to and includes this latest run I've done. It's an opaque game with a steep learning curve. And the only reason I was able to play it as well as I did when I was like 10 years old is because I had, no lie, the Prima strategy guide. And boy, that thing could really help me out in a bind. Doesn't mean I followed it. It certainly had some different ideas about how to approach some battles. But overall, this game is so difficult to approach for a novice. It's not a modern game by any stretch. There is no hand-holding. There is a tutorial in the game, but it's optional and buried under a menu, and it's not clear to me how thorough that tutorial is. So again, literally every time I've played the game, I've learned something new about the way damages are calculated, the way turn order is decided, the way different effects work, how long they last, etc. I've learned the rules of this better than ever, actually, in the last month or so. And I have a new appreciation for that, almost. I'm not a huge board game geek these days, but I definitely went through a phase in my 20s where I played tabletop strategy games with friends and coworkers. And boy, to win those games or compete in those games, you have to know in and out the intricacies of all these obscure rules and in deck building games, you know, how each card affects every other card. So just, and maybe it's just my own background as a, you know, engineer / software developer where I'm just really into the code of it all and understanding the math and why everything works the way it does. I mean, this game has, there are no hidden stats. You can calculate the damage you will do to an opponent with absolute precision. There's no RNG in that sense. Where the RNG comes in is where certain moves have a certain probability of execution. And again, just every character has a move number, a jump number, and that's their ability to move about the terrain. Every weapon has a certain weapon power, but a character also has a physical strength, and you multiply those two numbers together in most cases to get the damage you'll deal. So as you progress through the game and get better weapons, and as you level up through the game and get better physical power on your character, you know, look at that, the damage starts to ramp up exponentially. There are other stats. There's bravery, there's faith, and those are stats that are parameters that get plugged into equations where you wouldn't always expect them to show up. Having high faith is fantastic for magic users because it makes them more powerful. But all of your characters are more susceptible to magic when they have high faith, which is a cool little wrinkle. So I'm not going to go through every stat one by one, but just, you know, as the game progresses, the equipment you can apply and some of the additional moves and features you can sort of equip, they make the game so complex and interesting, while at the same time always following these fundamental rules that, you know, I've just really come to love more and more the more I've played this game. But as I said, there's a steep learning curve here, and I'm laughing almost as some of my friends, namely Sween and Trev, are just getting their asses handed to them by a few of these early fights, wondering things like, how do I know when my mage will use the fire spell that I've set up? And, you know, there's a very simple explanation for that, but the game never bothers to give it to you. So once you know it, you know it. And it's like, it's literally just press the right directional arrow when you're about to execute a move, and a little list of upcoming turns will pop up, and it will show you exactly when that move will happen. But, you know, if you don't know that, you don't know that. And I don't blame anyone for not knowing that. The game never tells you that. Just one of those tricks of the trade that this game requires you really to learn it and understand it. But once you know it, I just, it's so much fun. I love it so much. I mentioned skills like equip sword or move plus two. And the way you unlock these different capabilities is by progressing through what's known as the job tree. There are knights who are good at dealing damage and good at taking damage, but otherwise kind of slow and cumbersome in one note. There are ninjas who move far and act quickly and often are quite easy to kill, but very annoying while they're still alive, etc., etc. And the way this game combines moves that you learn while occupying different job classes and then allows you to sort of set those moves and equip those moves, or skills, I should say, as you change jobs is, in my opinion, brilliant. I mean, you have the most famous one, probably the classic example, is that a ninja can equip two swords, two weapons, and every other class of character can only equip one weapon. But the ninja's ambidextrous or whatever. And as a ninja, which is a hard class to unlock, you can learn for 1,000 skill points a move called dual wield, or two swords, depending on the translation. And once you have that skill, you can switch job classes, go back to being a knight or a squire or a samurai or whatever, and then equip two knight swords as long as you have that skill equipped. Another example is one called like arcane magic or something that you learn as a wizard, and it doubles the damage you can deal, or it might 1.5x the damage you can deal. My point is, it increases the power of your magic. So why wouldn't you want that as a wizard, right? As a mage. But if you equip that in your carryover skill slot, you can only equip one at a time. And this to me is a limitation of the game. Because in my opinion, it would be really cool if, like, you learned equip armor as a knight, and then also learned arcane magic as a black mage, and then were able to apply both of those to, I don't know, a summoner, and you have like an armor wearing summoner walking around dealing double damage with his spells. I realize that this would ultimately break the game, stacking them too high, but I think a better version of Final Fantasy Tactics, if it existed, would allow you at certain levels perhaps to unlock like a second slot for a carryover skill or ability, or a second slot for a reaction ability. Reaction abilities are actions taken in response to getting hit or targeted by enemies. The basic one is just counterattack. That's a great one to have. Arguably a better one is critical HP restore. And with that one, anytime you are put in critical health, you have a chance to just fully heal all of your HP. Absolute lifesaver in a few battles. But, you know, my point is you can't equip more than one at once. So you can't have a character who both restores his hit points and counterattacks. It's one or the other, or counters with magic, or for instance, automatically uses a potion or catches a thrown item. But a modern version of this game, if this game were made today, you would absolutely be able to spend experience points or certain level up moments in order to continue to unlock additional slots for these moves and really enable like a full customization of your characters in this game. But that's neither here nor there. The gameplay, the job tree, just the simplicity, and they're not simple, they're complex, but the clarity, parentheses, when you know what you're doing and how to play the game, combined with the wide array of jobs available and skill sets available, just makes for such a fun game where there's a different way to play through it every time, and there's no wrong way to play it. There's certainly tried and true strategies that work well, but you know, there's you could challenge yourself by doing multiple playthroughs, and I have. You know, I had an all archer team once when I was a kid. That team didn't do so well, and I eventually broke it up. But I went through like all of chapter one. And everybody on my team was an archer, and I thought, in my young naivety, look, this is cool. I have ranged attacks. A knight can never hit me. You know, turns out knights can hit you. They just walk up to you and you're basically dead as a bunch of archers, but whatever. You know, you can do an all magic using party. Obviously balance is probably the best approach here, but my point is you could challenge yourself with different limitations on your party setup. I think the best run I ever did, the most fun I had with this game was the last run I did before this latest one, which again, all the way back in like 2000, 2002 or something, where I decided my entire party was going to be based on the game Final Fantasy IV. And I would have a paladin, which would be my main character, Ramza, with white magic as a second ability. And I would have, you know, his girlfriend slash wife, Rosa, a white mage who uses a bow and arrow. I would have his frenemy, Kane, just a dragoon with no secondary ability. Just make item, you know, use item his secondary action. Rydia, the black mage summoner, and Edge, the thief ninja. I mean, just like these characters already existed, and I painstakingly recreated them in a different game and just had a blast doing it. Let's talk about the story, because I've raved about the mechanics of this game, the gameplay itself, but the story, it's just one of the best I've ever played in a video game. It's dark, it's mature, it's depressing. There are no happy endings for any of the characters in it. Virtually all of them die, and die gruesomely, or are betrayed in some way. But, and I don't want to rehash the entire story, I'm not here to spoil the game insofar as it can be, but I want to focus on Chapter 1. It's a 4-chapter game, and all of Chapter 1 is a flashback. And this, to me, is one of the best standalone origin stories I've ever encountered in a video game, or honestly, any art form. You know, and the game takes place in this medieval world. You play as Ramza, the third son of a noble family. So, you're highborn, your brothers are king shit, your father was a legend, but you yourself, not necessarily high expectations on you. And your best friend, Ramza's best friend, is this common-born guy named Delita. And Delita ends up being, or becoming, the king of all of Ivalice. And that's not a spoiler, that's given away in the framing at the outset of the game. The framing of the game is, hey, I'm a historian and a scholar, and I'm here to tell you that I've made a groundbreaking discovery about the War of the Lions, you know, that ancient conflict that, and this ancient conflict then turns out to be, you know, the game Final Fantasy Tactics that you are playing. But he says, you know, look, we all know how the story goes, the real history. And it says that Delita rose to unite the land after a brutal civil war and, you know, really become a unifying king coming from nowhere. His common-born guy turns into the king of the world. And the historian goes on, but I'm here to tell you, this is all a lie. There was the real hero of this conflict was this guy Ramza, the third son of the Beolv family, Ramza Beolv. And he was branded a heretic by the church, and you know, his story was buried, and my own great-grandfather uncovered the truth and wrote about it, but they burned him at the stake for doing so. But these papers, I've just discovered these in some vault, these papers, he goes on to say, this is the true history, and let's find out what really happened. And then, boom, rewinds several hundred years or whatever it is, you're Ramza. Here's Chapter 1, and this is the origin story that I think is just fantastic. Ramza and Delita, you know, they're best bros, they've come of age, they're like cadets at a military academy, right? They're they're learning how to be soldiers here in this very militarized world. And again, turns out Ramses got some highborn brothers. He himself is highborn, but Delita's just a commoner. And they've grown up their whole life with that dynamic, but it's never bothered them. They've always gotten along. Cut to, there's a large foreign war is ending. And, you know, Ivelisse has won the war, but they've gone essentially bankrupt doing so. And all these soldiers who helped win the war are now going unpaid. They're starving. They're turning to petty crime and theft and murder in order just to get by. Like, this is they're doing Shay's Rebellion, almost. They're doing the Whiskey Rebellion, if you want to use a American history analog, right? These are people who've been betrayed by their leaders, who are not given what they're promised. And your first mission in the game, you yourself, Ramza, Delita, you're told, you know what? A bunch of brigands are approaching. You gotta defend this town from them. And, you know, Ramza's line early on is like, hey, you don't have to turn to this life of crime. You know, I'm sorry we have to put you down, essentially, but that's what we're doing. That's the way of the world. You know, you didn't have to do this. And, you know, chapter one progresses. They rescue this guy, Argus, or Algus, depending on your translation. I know his name's like Argith. He's a shithead, and Algus just feels like a better name. Plus, that's literally what he's called in the original translation. So Algus is also highborn, and he's running up to Ramza after Ramza saves him, you know, kissing his hand. He's like, oh my god, thank you, from the Beol family. Yes, no, I myself am from a noble family, but not as noble as yours. He's a real star fucker, this guy. Just so class conscious and so focused on hierarchy and order. And then he turns to Delita and goes, who is this piece of shit? And Rams is like, this is my best friend. This is Delita. He also just helped save you. And Algus does not give a fuck. He's like, this man is a commoner, and commoners are the ones who are rising up against us right now. Ramza, you're gonna have to decide. There's gonna come a day where, you know, you can either stick up for filth like him, or embrace that you are, in fact, higher born than this. Real, like, Draco Malfoy vibes, almost. So Ramza and Delita and now Algus are sent by Ramza's older brothers to help quell this rebellion. This guy leading the Corpse Brigade, his name's Wegriff. And he was one of the most feared commanders in this war that just happened. But he's, you know, he's leading this Les Miserables level mutiny. These poor unpaid soldiers who again, playing this game as an adult, it's almost, the themes are hitting you over the head, but as a kid, it just blew me away. It worked so well. It was like, here's the good guy I'm playing as is fighting the bad fight and, you know, killing people who just helped win the war for his family. Regardless, the game progresses. Algus and Delita keep having beef, and then the Corpse Brigade runs to the Beolv Castle, one rogue member of it, and kidnaps what he thinks is the youngest Beolv sister, Alma. But it turns out it's not Alma, it's Tetra, or Tetra, or Teta, or, again, I've played different versions of this game. It's not that I forget their names, it's that they literally have multiple names, depending on the translation. And who is that? That is Delita's younger sister, and like, oh my god, tragic irony of all ironies. Delita himself, for being welcomed, he and his sister, as orphans, into this castle, into this family, and treated briefly like brothers or kin. Because his own sister was there, she has now been mistaken for some high-value target and stolen away. And, you know, Delita's beside himself. Ramza's like, don't worry, Delita, we're going to get her back. And, you know, the whole time Wiegriff and his men are again just fighting this ostensible good fight. You know, Wiegriff ends up killing the rogue guy who kidnapped Tetra and says, "This is not what we do. Like, we're stooping to their level. We can't do this. This is not who the Corpse Brigade is. This is not our goal in life." You know, kills the guy who went rogue and kidnapped her. And so Ramses' brothers are saying to him, like, "You know what, dude? We're never gonna let any harm befall Tetra." I keep slurring her name out. I'm just gonna call her Teta or Tetra. Maybe it's Tetra. I have no fucking clue, and I'm sorry about that. We're not gonna let any harm befall her. We've sent our best men out to the fortress where we assume she's been taken. You have our word. Like, we're gonna save her. And then Algus becomes just a total prick, and they leave the castle, and Algus says, "Yeah, they're lying through their fucking teeth. They're not gonna save a commoner. They're not gonna waste good men to save some common born, you know, wench or dog or whatever." And Delita just rears back and punches him in the fucking face, and he's like, "Fuck you, I hate you, you're a piece of shit. You know, my life matters, my sister's life matters, they can't just do this." And Ramses says to Algus, "You know, get the fuck out of here. I hate you. You're an asshole. I'm sick of you. Just go away." And Algus is like, "Yeah, well, you will learn how the world works. You really will, because you're naive and stupid." And, you know, this whole chapter, Ramses and Delita they've been tight. I mean, they're like brothers. They're more than just best friends. They're partners in arms. You know, they're very tight, and they share this beautiful scene where they sit down in a field and start blowing on grass or reeds or something, and you know, "Hey, remember when your dad taught us how to do this, man?" "Yeah, I do." And it's like that, you know, you know by now, this is not going to end well for these two. The sun is setting, it's a somber moment. Delita's, he's hoping they can save Tetra, but they're not going to be able to. You know that. But I didn't when I was 10, right? So lo and behold, you get to this fort. Key plot point here is that, you know, your brothers, the older Beolves, are going to take men to storm the front. And Delita and Ramza realize, no, if they storm the front, there's going to be this bad... A fight could break out. They're going to storm the fort. We're going to sneak in through the back and just rescue her. So, you know, you go around the back, fighting several battles along the way to get to the back. And, of course, lo and behold, in the final battle of Chapter 1, what happens? You, Ramza, and Delita, and your troops arrive just in time to see that the older Beolf brothers have arrived up front with who else but Algus. And... there's a knight, you know, a Corpse Brigade knight kind of holding Tetra up as a human shield and says, "You know, get back. You don't want us to do anything to this woman," who I think at this point their plan is unraveling because they've realized this is not in fact a Beolf. This is just a commoner. But, you know, he's like, "Get back. Don't make me do anything." And, Ramses' brothers say, "Algus, fire away." And Algus basically says, "Look, with pleasure." And he fucking just unloads a crossbow bolt directly into Delita's sister, killing her instantly, or so it appears. And then he, you know, the knight who was holding on to her just has time to stumble back and go, like, what the fuck? Algus, you know, fires one into him. He falls and it sort of locks the fort gate behind him. The older Beolf brothers go, "All right, that was stupid. Let's get out of here," and walk away. It's not even clear to me if they even see that Ramza is here witnessing this or if they just don't give a shit. And of course, then comes the climactic showdown. Ramza and Delita versus Algus. Delita's like, you fucking bastard. I will kill you. I'm going to murder you in cold blood." You know, you do end up winning the fight. There's a scene afterwards, Ramses going, "Delita, I'm sorry, I had no idea." And Delita, he doesn't want these words. A switch has flipped in him, And he's like, fuck the nobility, fuck everyone. You know, we should have listened to Algus. He was right about what pieces of shit he looks upon us as. And, oh, fuck, man. I am, you know, and all this is, none of this, this is all inferred, right? Because Delita himself is just silent and stoic. And then what happens? The fort explodes because the wounded knight, as he's backed into it, sets off a powder keg to try to kill whoever he can. And that's the end of chapter one. And it's this beautiful origin story, in my opinion, for both Delita, who goes on to become, again, not at all the protagonist of the game. You never play as Delita again, really, save for like a one-off battle. But he becomes, again, the hero of the war. He's the main character now of the upcoming civil war and the strife between two factions throughout Ivalice. Always a bit of a double agent. You encounter Delita throughout the rest of the game as Ramza, and you have conversations with him. And there's no love lost for you from him. He's a changed man from that moment on. Cold, calculated, manipulating, knows how to use people, knows exactly what this world is, and just really decides and determines, fuck it, I'm gonna change this world. I'm gonna end the suffering of the common people. And, you know, ultimately he does, or so it appears. And that is, again, the history that the historian at the framing of the game is referencing and saying, but this is not at all true, not fully. Again, Ramza Beulv actually saved the day, and you know, you experience and understand why as you then progress through the game. The plot gets very Game of Thronesy, lots of double-crossing, lots of side characters introduced only to be killed like two battles later. There's a lot to keep track of, and it all does collapse at the end of the game as just characters keep on dying, and finally there are fewer and fewer threads to keep track of, which is honestly nice. And I've compared it to Game of Thrones. In my mind, it all converges and ties a bow on itself much more neatly than Game of Thrones, which is no hard feat given how wildly off the rails Game of Thrones went at the end. But just a wonderful game, wonderful story, and that first chapter, just a beautiful origin story, talking about class conflict, class consciousness, motivating Delita, of course, to turn into the guy he turns into, and motivating Ramza to turn into the guy he turns into, which is a guy who, you know, is sort of that lawful good, or arguably chaotic good, in that sort of character alignment spectrum, where he renounces his name, renounces the nobility, renounces his brothers, and says, like, fuck all this, I'm gonna fight for what is right. And clearly my brothers are assholes, and most nobles are. Just a wonderful story, one of the best and most mature I've seen in a video game or elsewhere. I should mention that this game flies off the rails in its own way, late in the game. It's four chapters long, but that fourth chapter is as long as the previous three combined, and that's before you account for all of the side quests that it contains. And so many of those side quests end with you getting special characters, and in most cases severely overpowered game-breaking characters. The most famous one is Thunder God Cid Orlandu, who, as soon as he joins your party, it's like game over. You almost can't lose. He arrives with the third best sword in the game, which automatically casts haste upon him, which gives him additional speed and lets him move and act more often than he should otherwise. And his skill set in his like sword sage class, or whatever the hell he's called, just contains every move in what to that point has been three other different characters. He essentially combines three characters into one and is just fucking incredible by the time you get him midway through the fourth chapter. There are other characters you acquire that are just as broken in different ways. In the War of the Lions game, you can acquire Balthier from Final Fantasy XII. And again, I played War of the Lions for the first time this past month, and holy shit, Balthier is ridiculous. He has completely broken speed. He acts essentially twice for every one time any other normal character acts, and he shows up with a completely overpowered gun that does like 144 damage at base level of up to 8 tiles away. I know 144 is lost here, there's no context to that, but trust me, that's a ridiculous weapon to have. And one of his skills is just he learns this move called Barrage, which attacks 4 times, each for half damage, but like, boom, that's a 288 damage from 8 tiles away, and it happens with twice the regularity of anyone else. And oh, right, he's also a thief and can steal items and is better at doing so than regular thieves, just has higher success rates. He is ridiculously insanely broken. But that brings me to maybe when I say this game goes off the rails, I don't mean story-wise. I just mean that by the end of the game, the rewards you're seeking are really not leveling up and learning new skills. They're insanely hard to acquire items, most of which need to be stolen off of one-time characters or acquired by poaching one-time monsters, which is to say killing them with a specific character and then selling their hides at a bazaar or whatever. Or they're hidden in the map tiles themselves and you need to find them using a skill called Move Find Item, adequately enough. And by the time we're at that point, it's like, if you don't have this Prima strategy guide back in 98 or whatever, or if you don't have the internet today, there's just no... It's like playing the original Legend of Zelda. There's no fucking way you would think to move a certain character over a certain tile in order to get, like, the third best shield in the game or whatever. And you know, using a thief or Balthier to steal, like, the best armor in the game off of a one-time appearing enemy late in the game, you know, what does it get you? There's no real end game here to speak of. The game ends with the final boss, who is kind of the toughest fight in the game. He's really not, but, like, it comes at the tail end of a 5-battle gauntlet that certainly combines to be the toughest stretch of the game. But, like, you know, what are you gaining at that point by making yourself even better and more powerful and by collecting these insanely overpowered items and armor? You're, like, the reward for getting them is just getting them. So they're, you know, because you're already powerful enough to beat the game. There's no, do you see what I'm saying? Like, there's no dopamine rush from acquiring some of these items when you're able to, because great, it's just a collectible. There's not even an achievement or whatever. This game predates that, right? And these are extremely missable items, so if you're a perfectionist and a completionist, and I really tried to be on this game, but I gave up at some point. I wasn't going to get every item in this game. But my point is, there's no... This is where I kind of run out of steam, and this is maybe where the limitations of older games really set in. And I'm viewing them with modern eyes and going, is that all there was? Is that all there is? Like, you know, the best thing you can do as any form of art is leave them wanting more, right? You don't want to wear out your welcome. You never want to get boring or stale. And this game absolutely does not get boring or stale. But by the end of the game, you've got these ridiculously overpowered characters with ridiculous items, and there's no... What, you're using them to get more items? Like, there's no additional reward for doing that. Maybe the biggest case in point here is Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII is available very late in the game as an optional and optionally acquirable character. But not only does it take a very long time to acquire Cloud, once you do, he starts at level 1, unlike every other character in the game who starts at, like, you know, Rams's level or higher when you acquire them. So you're like level 30, 40, 45, 50 at this point, and Cloud is level 1. So just to make him viable in battle, you've got to grind him up. And then, well, what's this? He doesn't have a sword. Where is his sword? His sword, again, for no reason at all other than the game being needlessly difficult, exists in like a single tile on top of a volcano that, you know, if you don't find the right random encounter there and send the right guy to the top of the volcano to randomly pick up like Materia Blade, if you don't do all that, you can't even use Cloud's special moves. So by the time you've made Cloud, by the time you've acquired him, trained him up to be viable, and found his sword and unlocked his cool moves, it's like you've dumped hours into this process, and all for what? So that you can have Cloud in Final Fantasy Tactics? It does kind of hit its limits and fall off the rails. And I mean, a game like this, if it were released today or any time in the last 10 years, it would have DLC. It would have an online PvP, person versus person battle capability where I line up my best five guys and go against you with your five best guys, and we have ourselves a little chess match, a little tactical game of Final Fantasy Tactics, and we, you know, oh my god, we love it, we're having a blast. We're, you know, it could be like a Magic the Gathering level of metagaming with optimizations and then counter schemes and like, oh, I've never run into a party that's set up like this, how do I do this? I'm just thinking about what could be, what could have been. And unfortunately, this game, it just kind of, it exists and then it ended. And there was talk of making a proper sequel to it, and they never made one. And I don't see why they would now, 25 years later. It's never going to happen. I'm glad we got the update and the remake we did, and even that is hard to track down if you don't have a PSP or a smartphone. Now, everyone has a smartphone, don't get me wrong, but, you know, until recently, you had to have a PSP just to play the best translation and version of this game. You know, and I'm dying for a proper sequel to this. They released Final Fantasy Tactics Advance on the Game Boy Advance a few years after this came out, and I played it, and it was fine, but it was not at all Final Fantasy Tactics, especially story-wise. It involved, like, the protagonist is like a kid who gets sucked into a book, and within the book there's a fantasy world, and that's where the game takes place, and it's just so much more childish than, like, this, you know, medieval civil war with betrayals and murder and plot twists and church schemes. It's just not the same. I do have high hopes for the upcoming game, Project Triangle Strategy, or whatever its working title is. Very early on, that game looks like a true grid-based, turn-based, strategy, tactical RPG. But I have high hopes for this game. But I want a better, newer Final Fantasy Tactics, and I'm just never gonna get one. And that's okay. These things are special for a reason. They're special because of the time they come out and the time you play them. I'm confident that Trev and Sween, although they're intermittently enjoying this game, they're never going to view this as one of their favorite games of all time. Because, you know, you have to play a game when you're 10 to truly love it, or maybe arguably in college. And you know, it's this is just a game that holds a special place in my heart, and I'm so glad I got to revisit it, and I loved, honestly, every minute of it, every hour of it. Speaking frankly at this point, I'm probably never going to play this game again, which maybe sounds ridiculous until you consider that I hadn't played it for 15, 16 years before this, and when I started, went straight back into it, like hadn't missed a beat. I mean, this, I don't need to replay this game because it's always with me. I know that sounds corny, but It's a game I'll always love. I had a similar experience with Final Fantasy VI a few years ago, my all-time favorite game. I finally replayed it after, again, 20 years away from it, and loved doing so, and you know, don't need to do it again, probably ever. Which is, it's kind of bittersweet. At any rate, I don't know if this was worth listening to, but I'm glad I was able to just get all this praise off my chest. Thank you for your time, and bro off.